Yes, hello again and welcome inside. It is Less Than Jays. I am your boy, the Zoobs. We are continuing through the 40 and 30 series. We're talking all 40 members of the Toronto Blue Jays 40-man roster in the 30 days before first pitch of opening day. Lots of profiles to catch up on. If you missed the previous public podcast, it was Adam Macko. Who else spends 25 minutes talking Adam Macko? Me and my friend Avery Chenier from Gate 14 got that taken care of on Friday. Make sure to go back and check that out if you haven't already. And if you're really a sicko, you want to hear all 40 profiles, those are available. Patreon.com/lessthanjays. The $9 tier gets you every single player profile. So far in the last week, we've got Leo Jimenez, Ernie Clement, Nathan Lucas, Yosfer Zulueta, Wes Parsons, Brendan Little, Hagen Danner, the aforementioned Macko, and just yesterday, Spencer Horwitz and Addison Barger. Now we move forward with the most mysterious man on the 40-man roster. I can go back, I can read scouting reports, I can get educated guesses, I can look at minor league data, I can find all these things and track, you know, where we went in the past from those steps for some prospects and make some comps and read some data. But I gotta tell you, what do you do when the player in question hasn't pitched in a year, not because of injury, but because they didn't report to their Japanese league team because they are Cuban and defected after just 7 innings of work in the World Baseball Classic exactly a year ago? Well, I'll tell you what I do. I turn to the best in the business. You know my guest, I mean, from all over the place, but you know him best right now from the Fan 590, where he is the host of Jays Talk Plus in the Jays season, where he is co-host of the Raptors show during Raptors season, the guy that set the bar for Raptors coverage, and then just decided to come over and be the best damn Blue Jays radio host in the land as well. And not only that, an absolute stand-up guy, and I am proud to say one of my close friends, Blake Murphy. Blake, thank you for making the time.
We're doing this in early March. I was to understand this was about DJ Carton getting a two-way deal with the Raptors, not a potential swingman at the, you know, not the 14th pitcher on the Blue Jays roster, but I'm ready. I'm ready to roll.
This is the Noel eulogy that we're
yes. Yeah.
No, Yuriel Rodriguez, a guy that is a bit of a puzzler. I'll tell you, I was doing the research for this one, and you sort of start digging, and then you're like, huh, I can frame why they did this. It gets a little, the order of operations and the allocations questions in the big picture become, I don't want to say questionable, but interesting conversations to have. What is it about Yariel Rodriguez for you that draws you in as an interesting guy to talk about right now?
I think for me, the biggest thing is that he's something that in the modern era, with the access to data and video and information that we have, he is kind of an unknown, and we don't get that anymore. And obviously, you know, teams have been scouting him as far back as like 2017 when he came here, you know, playing with the Cuban national team in qualifiers against Canada and the U.S. There's that famous game where he had to enter in the first inning and ended up lasting through the end of the seventh against Canada. Cuba lost, but still a really impressive performance. So like, he's not an unknown in baseball circles, but for our purposes, look, even if you're not watching AAA games, AA games, NCAA games, Japanese games, Korean games, like, we always at least have numbers to go off of. And now in 2024, a lot of the times you'll be able to get your hands on, if not the StatCast kind of stuff yourself, you know, Enosaurus will have some stuff plus on guys from these different places. Lance Brzdowski will have some stuff on the shape of the pitches and things like that. When it comes to Yariel Rodriguez, we have nothing since the World Baseball Classic in 2023. The information we have on him in the 2 years prior from the Japanese league is, you know, a mixed bag of very good setup man of the year, and guy who was okay-ish as a starter, but better out of the bullpen. So now you're looking at, well, we just missed an entire calendar year of him. We have no data, not even low fidelity, like, hey, he played in the Mexican league, and we don't know what the quality of competition was like. We don't know. It was a black box. And it's not even, you know, sometimes you get that with a guy who had Tommy John or something like that. But this wasn't that. What was he doing the last year? Does he have three new pitches? Is his fastball way faster or way slower? Like, this is so fascinating to me where, yeah, we know a lot about him up until spring of 2023 as far as Cuban prospects go, but he just missed, not because of injury, one of like your age 26 season, like kind of a defining year on the pitcher developmental curve. And we don't know. So I'm fascinated to see how this one plays out, whether starter or reliever or both, or, you know, 2024 or 2025. It's just, you don't get this anymore where a guy's kind of a, not a mystery, but as far as 2024 goes, yeah, a mystery for us.
It's intoxicating. Yeah. 27, as you said, 27 years old, a lot of mysteries. One of those mysteries is not how much money he will be paid and how long he'll be under contract. 5 years, $32 million. That's an AAV of 6.4 per. If you needed the math, then you done for you. With elevator bonuses up apparently to as much as 47.5 for starter bonuses and as much as 37.5 for reliever bonuses. There's also a tricky little 2018 player option, or $10 million option if it's declined, according to FanGraphs.
And those options can become larger options if he hits certain qualifiers over the next four seasons. So that team option could end up being, instead of a $10 million club option, like a $11 or $12 million club option. There are a lot of wrinkles to this one. So even if you just wanted to consider it, what is it? It's 426 for the first 4 years, and then, you know, that they call it 532 because Yariel could just pick up that $6 million option if he's, you know, if he's Jaime Garcia or something like that. So yeah, 426 and then this fascinating option on top of it. And yeah, they went full out of the park baseball with like, what if I give you a million incentive triggers? It's like, okay, you get 60 innings. Here's a check for 100K. You went 10 more innings. Here's a check for 100K. Also fascinating because like, there will definitely be people who, like, I don't know, in a mid-September game, you think he's got a second inning in him and he only goes one out of the pen. And someone's like, well, that's so he doesn't get his bonus.
Grievance coming. It's going to be interesting to track because you're sort of hoping that it's good problems right at the end. You're like, you're sort of hoping like, oh, a good issue. We're getting a discount. We're getting him at 10 million or whatever it ladders up to elevate. I mean, it's one of those things. There's a couple deals on this roster around where he is, where it's like in a vacuum, 6.4 per for a guy like this is not a problem. But then you do six for him and six for Jimmy and 10 for Chad Green, and suddenly you're at $20+ million. And it's relevant now because a Matt Chapman signs, for example, and your mileage on Matt Chapman aside, people are getting into the, well, could they have nickel and dimed themselves into a $20 million player versus playing in this part of free agency, right? The IKF guaranteed money, the minor league contracts, the things that aren't particularly inspiring, but are not splashy in a way. I think he is under the radar on that, but the 6.4 for a guy that there is a very good chance starts this year and plays a good part of this year, not in the major leagues as well. It's sort of the weird way that it configures. I think this is if he's bad, then it's really going to be brought up. That's for sure.
Yeah. And if he's bad, you know, you like, if he's long-term bad, you end up looking at it as, well, maybe it's actually 4 years, 32 is how we need to think about it. Because when he picks up that player option in 2028, you know, he's not in the plans or whatever. But even then, so let's play out the scenario where he doesn't work out as a starter and he ends up being a reliever. And I've talked to some scouts and some of the, you know, pitch design people or pitch metric people that I mentioned earlier. And most people seem confident he's at least going to be a solid reliever. And if that's the downside, his annual value over this five-year deal, if we use the five-year 32 term, he's the 37th highest paid reliever in baseball. So, you know, the number two highest paid reliever in an average bullpen or something like that. Now, that's not great if he's a four ERA, you know, like if he's Trevor Richards, that's not good value, but it doesn't really kill you because the overall number's not that big. I agree with you. There is a cascading effect to some of these small decisions. IKF, I mean, certainly the Chad Green deal is a funny one to look at now. And Jimmy, I mean, I guess you earned the vesting option. Congrats, man. I was a little surprised not to see Jimmy dealt in the offseason, actually, but nobody has money. Anyway, when it comes to those things, especially for guys north of 30, especially for the guys who are not a long-term piece, I believe that that cascading effect is real, and that's worth warrants, you know, criticism really of, hey, 10 million here, 6 million here, 7.5 million here. None of those deals on its own kills you, but doing several of them does. With Rodriguez, I do think because he's younger and because there is the potential upside of, hey, even if this guy ends up a number five starter, $6 million a year for a number five starter is really good. I don't quite lump him in with those other guys because I think it's a different transaction type, if that makes sense.
Totally agree. And the upside is what you're betting on. You're betting on it being a discount and not a Jimmy Garcia for Trevor Richards sort of usage. You mentioned it, you alluded to it there, signed out of Japan, didn't pitch in a league in 2023, officially announced as a signing in early February, leaked a little bit through January. Some people may have had this before it came out officially. Some folks may have been tipped off.
Some people may have been just replying in other reporters' DMs or in other reporters' replies that they knew something and just didn't have it solid enough. Clearly, certain sources are not at the immigration office. Otherwise, this would have been a lot smoother.
As you mentioned, 2023 at a glance quickly, two starts for Cuba in the WBC a year ago in March, 2.45, 10 Ks and six walks in 7 1/3, plus a couple showcases. And that's it. Did not return to his team and did not pitch outside of those appearances. We have to go back to 2022 to get some bulkier data. A full-time reliever, 1.15 ERA, 60 Ks, 0.2 innings. Bowden Francis-esque numbers out of the bullpen. Not a lot to glean from that, though. It's hard to – you're already doing the mental accounting for how are you translating – stats from a different league, and now you're doing it a year out as a setup man. It's a little murky.
It is. And look, we've gotten to a point data wise where we can translate from Japan with some level of clarity. It's the second best league in the world. You know, we can adjust for quality of competition in the different leagues there and things like that. But you said it, this data is old, on top of which it's only a 54 inning sample. If this was, you know, if you're looking at even like some of the starters that came over this offseason, like that's a more robust sample because you've got innings there, right? Like a strikeout rate starts to mean more, walk rate starts to mean more. You know, we at least have a decent ability to capture, you know, what a guy's throwing and how over in Japan. So that's helpful here. But really, it's you know, obviously the 2022 stats are awesome. You can't be a bad pitcher and post a 1.15 ERA and win setup man of the year. And the only reason you're the setup man and not the closer is that they have another Cuban reliever, Raidel Martinez, who's coming over next offseason, who is like the best closer in Japanese baseball. Had an ERA under half a run last year. So I think he was very solid there as a reliever. Where I get into a little bit of trouble looking at the track record is, you know, you look at 2021 when he the first year of that 2-year deal he had signed, he had a 2.95 ERA, which is solid. As a starter, though, if you believe in something like fielding independent pitching, FIP, and that gets a little tougher to translate from Japan because, you know, you got to account for the difference in strikeout and walk and home run rates. But he had a FIP of like 5 when he was a starter in Japan that year. So you could tell me that that's, well, he's only 24. And like he just hadn't gotten there yet as a starter. You could tell me this is a reliever arsenal or was at the time. It gets murkier when you have these small samples and we're chopping them up and going further and further back.
Absolutely right. It'll be you're doing a lot of guesswork, and obviously where you sort of lean on the like somebody important, the Jonah Hill in this front office saw something, identified something. All I can do is go on and sort of, you mentioned you would talk to some scouts. I go on what I could find throughout the internet. Luckily, Fangraphs did do quite a bit of work on this. They grade the fastball at 60, the slider at 70. So, I mean, pretty classic setup man mix there, fastball, slider. Also mixing in curveball, changeup, and cutter, all of those to average, to just below average. And the command, a bit of a spike up, 50-50 in command, future value 45. Pack my ass with 45 future value guys on this roster. They also put out they had a more of an expanded preview of the table of, as you mentioned, sort of the projecting out stats from Japanese imported players and some similarities. For some reason, his age is 31 in the chart. Rafael Dolis is a name you would recognize there. 2020 Rafael Dolis, to be specific.
Do we have Japanese stats on pace of play? Is he going to be? Because I'll tell you, Rafael Dolis would not translate to Major League Baseball now with the pitch clock.
There's a 2018 Chris Martin. There's a 2022 Drew Verhagen. There's a 2023 Kodai Senga in there.
That's a nice one to have in there.
That's sort of your high end in terms of what his strikeout and walk rates could be whipped along. But all that is to say, you know, the scouting reports all sort of talking about the same stuff. The fastball, that big jump in 2020 going into the bullpen, sort of jumping from 92, 93 to 94, 96 and touching 100. Nasty, as it is said, straightforwardly in the two WBC starts where he was sitting 95, touching 98, and really bending in a good breaking ball. There are teams that view him as a starter, it says here, due to the brief success, but that, as you mentioned, the FIP near 5 in 2021 that dropped him down. The vertical fastball breaking ball combo looks similar to Pete Fairbanks. Is the big comp that I saw most people use, on par with a second or third best reliever coming out of contenders bullpen. CBS Sports uses the pitch data, telling us that the holding mid 90s velocity deep into starts and really spinning the breaking ball, which can look sliderish and curveballish. Again, maybe a lesser version of Pete Fairbanks would be an incredible outcome for the Blue Jays, they said. And they are sort of the contract, what we had talked about, sort of essentially reliever money, 4 years at $8 million per year. That is the going rate for a setup man these days. And the pitch data sort of suggests he will be at least a bat missing fastball breaking ball reliever. If he can start, great. Well, makes it a good signing for Toronto. If not, a high leverage relief role awaits. How does that jive with sort of some of the digging you were able to do in the time that you had?
So I did do some digging. This is probably the guy I've done the most. Obviously, so much of my career has been on the basketball side, and baseball, it's been jump in after, you know, basketball and hockey are done. So I got to actually like dig in and talk to some scouting people and talk to, you know, a lot more people about Rodriguez. So a lot of that jibes. Instead of Pete Fairbanks, I guess people tend to want to do comps on a pitch by pitch basis, which sure. I guess makes a little bit more sense. On the fastball side, something that, and this is a really good outcome if he ends up in the bullpen. But someone I talked to compared his, the kind of shape of his fastball. He doesn't throw quite as hard, but where every fastball basically looks like a hard cutter, like a slightly lesser version of Emmanuel Class A's fastball that he throws like 65% of the time. You know, now he touches like 99 with that instead of like 97, but the word, you know, everyone that I spoke to was like, yeah, his Yariel Rodriguez's base fastball has a lot of cut to it. It has almost exactly zero vertical rise to it. It's all that horizontal cut shape. Now that is a good thing in some ways. Obviously you throw it hard. A guy like Emmanuel Class A succeeds with that. Graham Ashcraft is another guy who has kind of a cut fastball shape that's really, really similar to the one Yariel Rodriguez is supposed to have. So, you know, you can have some success with that. That type of fastball also tends to be less split prone than a, you know, one of the rising fastballs or a fastball that, you know, doesn't cut quite as much. So, you know, if you're looking at his potential to be a starter, having a split neutral fastball is probably pretty helpful. And we know the slider is going to have big platoon splits traditionally. So that's one thing. Now, the drawback of that is that a flatter fastball generally is supposed to be a little easier to pick up the second time you see it. You know, it's not quite as deceptive out of the hand. We heard Danny Jansen talk about after his first, Rodriguez's first kind of spring bullpen session, they change his arm slots a lot. Maybe that's designed to kind of deal with that, you know, the predictability of kind of a flatter fastball. The other thing here is that, and this is where I'm going to get to use the most fun scout thing that got told that, like, get into the very nerdy scout terms is, so you look at the profile, right? And he's got this kind of cut heavy fastball that's flat. He's got this nasty slider that everyone loves from a scouting perspective. You know, Dalton Varsho's walking out of the box talking about how nasty it is. You know, Eno Saris's pitch plus metrics is like, yeah, that's like a 128 stuff plus slider and things like that. but you need something else. And what would make sense coming off of those is probably, whether it's a traditional sinker or a two-seamer, something with a little arm side run to play off that initial cut fastball. Now, the potential problem there is, someone told me Rodriguez is an elite supinator. So if you look, if you imagine the, like, what arm movement and wrist movement goes into making that slider so effective, that makes it hard to backspin a baseball. That same way of throwing a ball makes the backspin really difficult. So Jansen mentioned that he is throwing a two-seamer and a splitter in spring training right now. Jansen made it seem like he's throwing like seven pitches. He's going Chris Bassett mode out there. So they'll probably have to pair that in. Anyway, all of this is to say the fastball, as we understand it, probably needs a third pitch if he's going to be a starter, just for, you know, maintain velocity and the flatness of it and things like that. But as a reliever profile, having a split neutral fastball that, you know, tracks with a Graham Ashcraft or a Pete Fairbanks or a poor man's Emmanuel Clase, that's a good one. And everyone believes the slider is a real weapon. So first time we see him in spring, the thing I'm looking at is, okay, what are those tertiary offerings look like? You know, what is that two-seamer or sinker or splitter, whichever one of those you settle on? What does that look like? Someone mentioned possibly coming up with like an in-between the cutter and slider, like more of a gyro slider. I don't know that you maybe if you can't get something to go arm side, you do that just to mix it up. But yeah, the slider is the headline item. And then the other stuff is figuring out, okay, are you a 60% slider guy in the bullpen, or are you a guy who can have 3-4 pitches and go two times full through the order?
I'd love to be very reductive and just say, if you're bullpenning with Swanson and Gosman and not tooling with a splitter, malpractice. It's just straight up malpractice. Yeah. Like you don't want it bad enough is sort of my,
yeah. I need to know how big his hands are is the big thing. Cause you see everyone who throws a splitter has these just like basketball player size hands. So that's the scouting I need. And I didn't get, I'm asking every scout. Yeah. So what are his hands like? Tell me about his finger length.
The projections, it's not the rosiest thing of all time, and it can be difficult to map out a guy. We've talked about the difficulties. Between the bat, zips, and steamer, your low ends, a 4.11 ERA, a 25% K rate, a 9.7% walk rate. Your high ends, a 5.33 ERA with a 5 FIP to match it, 19.5 K rate, and a 10.7 walk rate. Bat sort of liking him the most, zips liking him the least, all of them projecting him for mid-40s appearances, low end 55 innings pitched, high end 71 innings pitched, a range of 0.1 to 0.8 war per Fangraphs. Does that feel right? And obviously projecting is like a fool's errand, but does the 20% to 25% strikeout rate, that's a pretty big range of outcomes. Does that feel right for you though, at least as a guy getting his feet wet, coming over, pitching a full load for the first time in a year and a half?
Yeah, I think 25 and 10, strikeout and walk percentages are reasonable targets, right? Like we'll see. We don't have enough information to know, you know, what is the BABIP profile? What's the ground ball rate? Stuff like that is even hard to come by. But yeah, I think as a base projection, if he could have a 25% strikeout rate, a 10% walk rate, that's enough of a starting point to build either a very good reliever or like a number 4 or 5 starter out of. Can you, doing that over 55 innings and doing that over 100 innings are two very different things. But I think that's, you know, those are reasonable targets for just about any non-established pitcher, I think.
Discourse around Yariel Rodriguez. I tracked optimism when it first happened, right? People were excited for fucking anything to happen. It was like, we got a guy, we got something, we got a dude. And there was excitement when he first showed up.
Isn't he kind of the only offseason transaction that's not like a clear, like lateral or run it back move?
Yeah.
Like if you consider IKF the Whit Merrifield replacement,
I do.
Everything else was like
Turner for Belt.
Yeah.
Kiermaier for Kiermaier. He is the only, you call it net new sort of conversation. I think people were excited for him to show up. People were excited to see him. First
buddy, bullpen. Rolling up in a leather jacket to your first morning of spring. Great stuff.
Looking
where'd you park the motorcycle, Yariel?
To me, the visual was like he looked like he looks like the best friend of a female lead of a rom-com. That's like he's like a gym instructor or something, and he's like himbo with a heart of gold, sort of the vibe that I get from his beautiful face. But I think people are generally excited for him. I wonder if that lasts throughout the whole year, if he's somebody that isn't right away in the bullpen or right away contributing. You obviously have a larger following and are always keeping tabs. How do you define how you think people are discussing and feeling about the fan base, specifically Yariel, right now?
Yeah, honestly, I think, you know, he's in a interesting spot where I think the discourse around him is going to depend on what the Alek Manoah discourse is. And that's obviously not fair to Yariel Rodriguez, but it's also probably going to allow him some training wheels in terms of, you know, the fan reaction or expectation level, where, like, if Alek Manoah looks good in spring and is the number five starter, like, you've got no pressure to, hey, go down to Buffalo, continue to build back up. He's already got a late start to spring here. He said he sees himself as a starter. You tell him, hey, this is the only year we can option you because of this interesting quirk that we added to your contract. So this year you can be option. We're going to use that to make sure that you're a starter long-term. You're the first guy up if someone else, you know, goes down or whatever. And obviously the Jays already have a couple bumps and bruises with Gausman and Manoah and Tiedemann and things like that. So, you know, you're going to need, like, last year's an outlier. You're going to need like 7-8 starting pitchers over the course of a season. And I think that's probably, if we're talking about maximizing or at least seeing what the maximal value is for him over the entire life of the deal, I think that's the best thing for him. Now, if Manoah is a disaster or he's hurt or something like that, then suddenly it's like, well, you got this money, and even though you're technically only making $2 million of that this season, you know, they need you in that number five spot, and or hey, they need you to cobble it together with Bowden Francis and Mitch White. So I don't know. I haven't seen anyone discussing it really like he absolutely has to contribute day one. But I think if Manoah were to be bad again, or another pitcher is injured at some point, then yeah, the focus would kind of become on him, because even if it's a long-term play, you're 27 and you got a pretty good, you got a major league caliber deal here. You might need to help the club.
Tough one here can be, but can you force a comp? Is there somebody he reminds you of in terms of maybe the mystery, maybe the aura, to steal a word, or the stuff, or the package?
Yeah. So I went the kind of outcome way rather than the vibe way, because of the style of fastball and this kind of, we don't know pedigree wise if he's a starter or a reliever or something like that. As I was going through guys, one of the maybe better case scenarios that I thought of, again, with the fastball type in mind, is Justin Steele from the Cubs, who kind of started out as a swingman. There was a knock on him that, hey, the fastball wasn't good enough and didn't move enough at the velocity it was to be a starter. And he was just able to do enough other things and round out, you know, getting that walk rate down further and further. Now, maybe the like 3.15 ERA he posted over the last 2 years is too big a shot, but we talk about, you know, 24% K rate, 10% walk rate. What does that look like? Well, Steele as a swingman in 2021 had like a 4.25 ERA, putting up roughly those numbers. And that was his age 25 season. So maybe that's the type of guy that you look at. Hey, you know, not as thick as Rodriguez, but 6'2", 205, a guy who doesn't have the best fastball in the world, but has really made it work. And people really only saw him as maybe a mid to back end rotation guy at the start.
Yeah. Great picks.
To be clear, Rodriguez throws much harder than Steele. It's just, again, with the, like, that fastball doesn't move a ton kind of criticism.
It's a great way to put it. I lean on the Pete Fairbanks. Like, yeah, he's Pete Fairbanks with less. Absolutely. Why would Fangraphs lie to me? What would they gain from that?
If he costs no money, the Tampa Bay Rays would have been all over him.
It's one of those beautiful things. Like, his comp is a guy that the Rays would make appear out of thin air and then trade for a great player out of nowhere for no reason. It's like,
yeah. Except. Yeah, I mean, Fairbanks as a reliever outcome would be crazy, right? Like, what was his ERA last year? Like 2.5 or something like that, and like 35-10 strikeout to walk rate or whatever. Like, that would be pretty sick. And then Fairbanks, what, throws like 99 with the slider?
Yeah, if he's consistently touching 100, then it, you're a little closer with the comp. Yeah. Also, Pete Fairbanks makes 12 over 3 and not 56 over 5, but still.
Also, a note, because as I was trying to compare Pete Fairbanks and Justin Steele's size to Yariel Rodriguez, he is listed on Fangraphs at 6'1", 165. Bullshit. No, yeah. We need to director of measurement at Fangraphs. You go over there and you take another look at Yariel Rodriguez, 6'1", 165. Come on.
2024 outlook. We talked a little bit about projections. We talked a little bit about discourse. What do you think his year looks like?
I will lean a little bit on the optimistic side here, like team wise, because I think you and I are both Bowden Francis guys.
Yes.
And I personally still have some Mitch White stock that I'm not really willing to let go of yet. So I think if those two guys are reasonable, you know, Mitch White's out of options, that's probably your long man in the pen. Bowden Francis is maybe your, you know, fifth starter if Manoah's not ready, or he's the first man up since he's got options or something like that. If those two guys are clicking, that allows you to be patient with Yariel Rodriguez. And I think the, you know, if you're keeping the whole 5-year contract in mind, as well as the fact that you're going to need starting pitching depth over the course of the season, I wouldn't mind him starting the season in AAA as starting pitching depth, let him continue to work and stretch out and stuff like that. And then, yeah, first man down in either role, starter or bullpen, he's the guy up. And, you know, maybe at the end of the year, you've ended up throwing 55, 60 major league innings and a similar amount in AAA. And then, because the other thing is, like, I don't know, like, obviously we've thrown out the Verducci 35 innings a year jump rule long, long, long ago. But he is coming off of a year where he threw no innings, a year after he threw only like 50. So they're probably not want to throw him a whole starter's load to begin with. So I don't know. I could see him kind of in, I guess, for lack of a better comp, like last year's Bowden Francis role.
Yeah, I think we're going to see him. That's for sure. I think like he definitely is going to be in Toronto in the big club. I think that's almost a no doubter to me at some point. I think the comp that people lean on when talking about this type of player high end is to say, you know, that great year Ross Stripling had, where it sort of became, he ended up being such a valuable long man that it was undeniable that he would become almost a sixth starter or almost a guy that you had to get into your fifth. I don't know that that happens this year. The road is certainly there. The Manoah lack of bounce back is certainly an easy path. And as you said, Mitch White out of options. I have some Mitch White stock left, but it has a stop price on it. So it'll sell without me touching anything. But, you know, Bowden Francis, as you mentioned, lanky stoner. I simply must stand. I have no option. Yeah. I had no option there, but it's not like, this isn't like, oh, what does it have to happen for Leo Jimenez to be an everyday guy? Like, right. It's a pretty short path between there and here.
Let me put a bold prediction, not really related to Yariel here. The Blue Jays will need more starting pitchers than they needed last year. It's going to happen. They're not going to, like, they went a month with like four pitchers. They're going to need more guys this year, and that's going to mean Francis and White and Yariel, Cheese Dallas, whatever else. Tiedemann, I need to physically see him on a mound at some point. But yeah, you're going to need more guys. And look, there are also points in the season where like it'll make sense to just have the extra guy in the bullpen who can give you some length. Again, the Bowden Francis role, or, you know, Stripling, when Stripling was first with the Dodgers and he got a late start, right? Like, his career started at age 26, but he spent 4 years with the Dodgers before he got dealt to the Jays as like the first two kind of, you'll go up and down and bullpen to starter. And then he kind of was the true swing man the last 2 years, but that was like insanely valuable for the Dodgers. And the Dodgers are like, short of the Rays, the kings of, we're going to churn guys so that everyone is always optionable. And like, they've already made a bunch of deals this offseason of like, we'll trade this guy for some prospect far down the line who doesn't need a 40 man spot. Anyway, that type of guy is very, very valuable if you're a team that has actual depth and can find the value in sending a guy up and down and find those right kind of points in time and schedule to do it.
I think the Dodgers and the Rays are valuable in that way, that I think they've allowed some people, I know myself included, to get a little bit out of the thought process of who's the number five starter and a little more into how are the 32 starts in that slot being going to be distributed.
Yeah.
It's a little less like, okay, Manoah 32 times through the thing. It's a little more like, okay, does Kikuchi do enough in 25 of them and then you only need 7 more? Or are you going to 6-man sometimes? Or is it 10 and 10 and 10 between 3 different guys? Or is it 8 and 7 and 6 and 4? It's sort of like, open my eyes up to like getting out of the rigidity of it's this guy and then it's this guy and then it's this guy. It's a little bit more like, how do you manage the amount of innings that that role is going to need? And I definitely see him valuable in that way. 2024 beyond, I mean, he's here for a while, unless he gets cut next year. Get ready to learn Yariel Rodriguez, buddy. Sort of.
Yeah, look, I think he's going to be fun, man. The intensity is like, obviously we haven't seen him on the mound since the World Baseball Classic, but like that Cuban team was fun. That last Baseball Classic was incredible. And like, yeah, he shows up in a leather jacket and you make the joke about, you know, the best friend in a rom-com. But it's also like, yeah, the first thing he says through a translator is like, yeah, I'm super intense. I'm really emotional out there. I can't wait to get in the heads of hitters again. I'm like, yeah, let's go. Let's look. It's an important thing in baseball over the 162 to be able to like stay above it and be even keeled and stuff like that. But you need some guys who are, you know, can flash the crazy eyes. Like those are very beautiful blue eyes, but they can turn on you, I bet. So I think the Jays could use a little bit more of that.
And not to mention a guy that, to borrow some parlance from the NBA, like, he's bet on himself here. Like, taking it, I'm going to take a whole year off and then be an MLB pitcher the next year. That is not a small wager on your own self, and it has paid off in the form of a big paycheck. Anything else on Yariel Rodriguez before I cut you loose today?
No, I just, you know, I'm sure the guys and girls on the beat will be doing this, but once he's, you know, established and the, hey, you're new here, what does that look like part of spring training or the early part of the season goes away, I'm going to be fascinated if someone can dig in with him and his translator about what the last year looked like from a baseball perspective for him. Because we know, like, hey, March, the World Baseball Classic ends, you're on a flight Cuba to Japan, you ditch it and reroute to the Dominican so you can establish residency and come over without your family. By the way, he's been separated from his family still since March of last year. But what did the baseball side of that look like? Like, how do you prepare for this giant bet on yourself? How are you getting yourself ready for like sim games that you're doing for potentially interested teams and things like that? I'd be very fascinated to, and obviously the Dominican Republic is a country with baseball resources and baseball facilities and stuff like that. But yeah, I'd be fascinated to hear that side of things as well. How do you never get a gap year. You don't get a red shirt year in professional sports. What does that look like?
Yeah. Great shout. I haven't even considered the story is almost like, it's hard to properly even sell the, like, he was supposed to fly back to Japan and just didn't. Like,
yeah,
that's wild.
Like, we weren't even sure if he'd be granted free agency by Major League Baseball this offseason because he had a year left on his Japanese deal and just no-showed.
I'm relating more and more.
Not to the leave your kid behind in another country part, though, right?
No, the, like, I'm just not going to go to work and see if they fire me. Yeah. Blake, everyone knows where to find you, at Blake Murphy ODC on Twitter and on the radio every day, talking baseball, talking basketball. We can't wait for JT Plus to come back. Can't wait for the first Yariel Rodriguez on Jays Talk Plus appearance where you're just two beautiful men looking at each other and the poetry, the music.
I haven't done one with a translator yet. Like, even Barrios, when he came on, we just did straight up because, I mean, I haven't had a lot of Jays on the show for non-show reasons the last couple of years. But yeah, I'd be fascinated to do that. Get Hector LeBron on there with us and chop it up. April 17th, by the way, is the return of Jays Talk. There'll be a couple other episodes like opening day, I'll do one and stuff like that, but April 17th is the official JT Plus start date, assuming the Raptors don't without Scotty Barnes, without Jakob Poeltl, without Bruce Brown make up the five games in the play-in standings.
Can't wait, man. As always, just a pleasure to talk ball with you. You're doing such a great job considering things and finding angles and diving into the data, but also letting the plebes among you understand what exactly it means and how it all relates to the big picture. Thank you so much again for the time, brother.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for having me on.
So much more still to come. As I mentioned off the top, if you're looking for more profiles, you can find those. Patreon.com/LessThanJays. $9 tier gets you extra episodes. If you just like the regular episodes, only want them a little bit longer with me and Jake, those are available at the $5 tier. All that and more, patreon.com/lessthanjays. To come this week on the public feed, you're going to hear Rob Wong talking about Orelvis Martinez, and you're going to hear Johnny Junta from Gate 14 talking about Davis Schneider. And if you're on the Patreon, lots and lots, or even thinking about going to the Patreon, lots of profiles coming this week to finish off. We talked Horwitz and Barger. We're going to talk to three guys really that are in, I don't want to say competition, but in league with Rodriguez and his spot on the depth chart. We're going to talk Bowden Francis. We're going to talk Nate Pearson, and we're going to talk Mitch White, as well as going through the bullpen, everybody but Swanson and Romano coming out later on this week. All that is just the end of this week, and then we're into week three. We're into the actual active roster. We got Jano, we got Chris Bassett, we got all kinds of guys to talk about. Dalton Varsho, you name it. If they're on the 40-man, we're talking about it and bringing in some really cool, really fun guests. I'm very excited. Things have been going very well so far. So you know where to find that. Patreon.com/LessThanJays. We'll talk to you later on this week. Thank you so much for being a part of Less Than Jays.